20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Welcome into Behind Enemy Lines, a collaboration between the Paul Farrington Show and the Pack-A-Day Podcast. Paul, joined by Robert Ziggy Ziegler up at Harvard University and Andy Herman of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. To react to week 11 around the NFC North, Packers big win over the Giants. I'd say a season-saving win for the Packers and a crushing game-losing field goal loss for the Vikings to the Chicago Bears, who continue to find ways to win late in games, miraculously at times. I don't know if this one, Chicago felt like, you know, they had controlled the most of the way through, and the Vikings almost pulled it off again against the Bears. But here we are now. The Chicago Bears, guys, lead the NFC North through 11 weeks of football. Did anyone, Andy, did you see that coming?
I did not. Do you want to take a quick guess? Not that this matters a ton, but do you want to take a quick guess in the order of teams in the NFC Central based on DVOA?
Gosh, I have to imagine we're last.
Who's first?
the Bears.
The DVOA order is Lions first, Packers second.
Wow.
Vikings third.
No, really?
Bears fourth. The Bears are fourth in DVOA in the NFC North. They have a negative 7-point differential. Yet here they are sitting atop the NFC North.
That
and
is
could even be a game better had it not been for the crazy comeback by you guys in week one.
That's the end of that game.
Yeah, so it's wild out there in these NFL streets.
It's just been a bizarre season. It's been so weird in so many ways. The NFC North might be the perfect picture of that. You know, the Bears are leading the way, and here the Lions are still one of the favorites to win the Super Bowl, and they're not even in the playoff picture right now. And then you guys
the,
too,
the
right?
The fact that the Ravens, the Lions, and the Chiefs, if the season started today or the postseason started today, would not be in the playoffs is, again, just another sign of absurdity in the NFL.
Yes, but with the Packers winning a closer game than it should have been and the Vikings losing off a last-second field goal, nature is healing, guys. The NFC North is going to be back to normal soon enough.
Yeah, well, we'll see this weekend. This weekend now, the Packers are, what, you guys opened a 6.5-point favorites. We'll get to that towards the end of the show, the Vikings and Packers clash in Lambeau Field. Actually, which we will all be at, right? Andy, you'll be at that game too?
Yep.
Yeah, and Ziggy and I at least will be at the Hagemeister Brewery from 4 to 6 this Saturday. And maybe, I don't want to put anything out there, but maybe a brief
I'm going to try to get there for the first 10, 15 minutes. Can't guarantee it, but I'm going to try to get there the first 10, 15 minutes.
What was I thinking making a bet where I wear a Packers jersey this weekend? Like, what was the thought process there? Because now that it's actually coming up and it's going to be next weekend, this is a horrible decision.
Yeah, Ziggy, I tried to tell you that.
That was a great decision.
Andy, you know, we bought him a custom Ziggy Packers jersey.
That's amazing.
Like that's where the show fun. People ask us, oh, what, you guys make any money? Like, what do you spend it on? It goes to Ziggy Packers jerseys from this show. So yeah, you will see Ziggy in a Packers
jersey. I don't know what your
Lambeau
plans are for that. In the future, I might have an opportunity to utilize said Ziggy Packers jersey. So we'll have to maybe talk about that in the future. So.
I just don't like where any of this is going. Although I will say I'm pretty pumped to see a game at Lambeau. Never seen a game there before.
Okay, Ziggy, have you?
No.
Oh, okay. Yeah, just... It's unbelievable. I don't want to spoil anything, but you go in through, first of all, I don't care where your tickets say to go through. I don't know if it depends. If you want to go in earlier, go to like the back of the stadium, or if you want to get in quicker, go to the back of the stadium and then find your seats once you get in. If you want to like have the full experience, go through the atrium and then it might take a little bit longer, but it's not by much. So go through the atrium and then you get kind of the atrium experience and then you go into the stadium from the atrium. And then eventually you're going to go to your section. And there's this little tunnel that you'll walk through, and walking through that tunnel from the, you know, the concourse into the stadium and just having Lambeau Field open up to you is the greatest thing in the world. So enjoy every second of it. I always like from the press pass, the credentials we get, we have to like walk around up top. It's this long, elongated way of getting wherever, but you're like sort of above the concourse. And I love just seeing like people come in and walk in, and you can see like certain people that are like going in for their first time, and just, it's the coolest thing. So enjoy every second of it, regardless of what you're there for. It's always one of the most amazing experiences in the world. So
well, I still remember stepping on the Lambeau Field for the first time, and that might've been the greatest moment of my life. So I can't wait to see a game at Lambeau.
It's awesome.
I have to imagine it's a little bit, we were talking about after the draft, it felt a lot like the area Notre Dame when Ziggy and I, you know, we're in college, you're just dumped in this, you know, tiny Midwestern town, this great football city or great football environment. So I'm kind of imagining that's what game day feels, a little bit like a college environment almost.
It does.
And that's just awesome. So. Yeah. So much history, even though, you know, I have a distaste for the Packers, I'm very excited to go and check out the football history side of things.
It's a cathedral. It's just immaculate. It's perfect. It's why, unfortunately, there's more and more visiting fans every year, is because it's become this like iconic, you have like bucket list item for visiting fans of like, well, I got to get to Lambeau at some point, and you should, I hate to say it, but like every fan should get to Lambeau at some point. Just hopefully, you know, Packers fans first and foremost.
Even LaFleur, he alluded to that in his press conference the other day. He's like, yeah, hopefully it's not filled with Vikings fans. I don't know if that was a shot at Green Bay fans or not, but it kind of felt.
Yeah, it's just been different, you know, I think that the more that the cost of tickets has gone up, you know, season ticket holders, like if you go to every single game, like, and again, this isn't like, you know, complaining or anything, but like it gets extremely expensive. So you usually sell off like a handful of your, you know, tickets, you know, for a lot of people. And, you know, when you do that, you're usually, a lot of people are just using ticket, you know, sites and whatever. And, you know, with that, again, that's become a bucket list item for away fans. And over the years, you know, that used to be like 98% green and gold. And now it gets pretty full of opposing fans, opposing teams fans for sure.
I remember people like us buy the tickets.
Yeah. I remember the Lions game. Lions fans have traveled there well, but I guess not to make too many comparisons with Notre Dame again, but yeah, that's something that we get annoyed as ND fans. We had a Georgia game in our freshman year with Ziggy where there were 30,000 Georgia fans in the stadium and walking around, they're all saying, you know, this is a place that it's a bucket list item as a football fan. And they were spending $800, $900 a ticket. It kind of makes sense to sell that one off, but it hurts the team on the field, and to some degree when you have 20,000 fans from the other team there.
Absolutely. And Packers fans can't complain too much because the vast majority of games, I mean, the Giants game was like 50% Packers fans there. Yeah. And like, if you go to like a Rams game or a Raiders game or anything like that, and it's Jaguars, any of that, like it is just packed full of Packer fans. So it definitely works both ways.
I've always compared Notre Dame to the Vikings with the heartbreak, but I'm kind of coming to this really, really frustrating realization that Green Bay might be the much better comp with the historical success and the, all right, I don't like this. Let's move off this. This is not where this was supposed to go. So the Giants Packers game, Packers win 27-20. Jordan Love gets banged up a little bit, but comes back with another clutch drive late. Christian Watson, two unbelievable touchdown catches for him. He's been awesome since coming back. But I actually want to start, Andy, and ask you a question about the defense before we turn things over to the offense. I was kind of getting a back and forth with some of our listeners about whether or not this was a strong defensive effort from the Packers. I personally came down on the side of Green Bay's defense was not good in this game with, you know, four 10 plus play drives, another 9 play touchdown drive. Couldn't get off the field on third down or fourth down, dropped interceptions. I thought that this was definitely a regression from the performance we saw against Philly. Where do you come down on that?
I've had this conversation a lot this week because I think it's a really interesting conversation. So let me start by asking you this. All right.
Sure.
In general, like a 20 point performance in the NFL, you allow 20 points on defense. I would argue that's probably a winning performance more often than not. Would you agree?
Yes.
Okay. Jameis Winston, 19 of 29, 201 yards passing, no touchdowns, one interception, took 2 sacks on the day. If you look at an opposing quarterback performance, you would say, all right, if the opposing quarterback's 19 of 29, 201, no touchdowns and a pick, I feel pretty good about my defense's performance.
Yep.
Running the ball. They ran the ball a lot, but they averaged 3.77 yards per carry on the ground. My defense holds the opposing rushing attack to 3.77 yards per carry on the ground. That's just the running backs. That's not included Jameis Winston's 3 for 10, or just the running backs, 3.77 yards per carry. I feel pretty good about my defense's performance on the ground. Leading receiver, Isaiah Hodgins, 5 catches, 57 yards. If you told me there any team's leading receivers at 5 for 57, I feel pretty good about the performance. So did you get turnover? Yeah, you got a Jameis Winston pick in the end zone to end the game. And technically, you had another one with Micah Parsons at the end of the game. Technically, you got two turnovers. You also got a huge stop on the fourth down to turn them over on another drive. So the bizarro situation that you get yourself, and this is like the same thing that we could say about their 16-point performance, their 10-point performance, their 19, you know, like all these games where they kind of limit the point production, you see these same sort of numbers. You get to the end of the game and you're like, yeah, I think that's just kind of a winning defensive performance. Like overall in the game, during the game, as their third quarterback, their number two running back without their top one and two wide receivers, is sort of taking almost 12 minutes more in time of possession and dominating the play clock, and you can't get off the field, and they're kind of nickel and diming you to death. It feels really awful in the moment. And it's like, this is not when you bring in Micah Parsons, the defense that you signed up for. You're expecting, you know, to be a little bit more dominant than that. And they weren't. And I think in this game, I have less, you know, kind of forgiveness because the Giants offense is just quite frankly not that good. But this has sort of been the idea of this defense all season long, is like you get to the end of the game and you look at all the stats and analytics and everything. And it's like, yeah, they put together a winning performance, but it does not feel like it in the place nor the time of when the game's taking place. And it always is just leaving you wanting a little bit more.
Well, I think the advanced statistics actually do tell you that the Packers defense didn't play their best game.
This one, right?
If you look at the success rate, if you look at the Giants EPA per play, it's like an 80th percentile performance. If you look at results over the past 5 years. And a lot of that is going 10 for 18 on third down. You talked about their great stop on fourth down. That was the only one. The other three, the Giants converted. So I think generally the Packers defense has played as well or sometimes even better than the actual opponent score indicates. But this game, there was a lot of value lost. And that's not even counting how much EPA they must have lost to 3 or 4 dropped interceptions.
Yes.
Like when Jameis Winston's playing, you've got to take advantage of those plays. And the Packers got one and it was enough, but you could have had a lot more.
They dropped 4 picks, which is the huge, huge factor in this game. Of if they just hold on to almost any of those other ones, and again, who knows the butterfly effect, but it certainly feels like Green Bay could have held them, you know, under on one of their touchdown drives. They dropped 2 interceptions on that drive.
Yeah.
On another touchdown drive, there was a 3rd and 15 screen pass to Tyrone Tracy, and Cooper reads it perfectly, has him in his grasp, and Tracy breaks out of it and then picks up the first down. And again, they end up scoring a touchdown on that drive. Like this has been the Packers story all year, but this is like this close to like a 40-13 game. And instead it's like, you're fighting for your life at the end.
Against Philadelphia too. I thought that was a great defensive effort. That was, you know, looking through the drive charts, and, you know, tons of 3 and outs, 5 plays, punts all over the place. I mean, the Giants, you had the 2 3 and outs early in the game. One of which came on somewhat of a drop, I think it was from, I believe, Wandale Robinson.
I think so.
But it just felt like the entire game, the Packers, you know, really couldn't generate many negative plays. The Giants would be in 3rd and 2, 3rd and 4, whatever it was, and someone would find their way wide open and Winston converted. And Winston, for the most part, played pretty well, but put the ball in danger a lot of times and just never able to make that big play. I just so adamantly disagreed with everyone who said 20 points is 20 points when the drives are 11 plays, touchdown, 16 play, 10-minute drive. Turnover on downs is great, but you're not allowing Love and the offense to get in any rhythm when they're on the bench for 8-9 minutes at a time. Like, I just can't see that being a formula that has any success against Stafford in the playoffs, or even if you play the Lions again. I know they beat them earlier in the year, but you got to get off the field.
I totally agree. And like, here's the thing too. you're basically saying like, well, we limited them to 20 points. Well, you cut the game in half because you allowed them these 10 and 12 minute drives. So yeah, if the clock's constantly running and there's fewer drives, inherently both teams are going to have fewer points in the game and fewer opportunities for points. But yeah, it does feel like they're living a little bit of a half-life with that. It was very similar to Carolina. You know, they allowed only 16 points in that game. We talked about it, only three negative plays in that game. And one of the negatives, the forced fumble, actually went for a positive. So like they just have not been able to generate those negative plays. And until they do so, it's probably going to continue to be the same story.
I mean, even the sacks, right? One of his sacks came on the final play of the game on the Winston, you know, he was lining up for a Hail Mary. Yeah. And Parsons forced the fumble. You know, you take that away and it's one sack on the day between Correct. Parsons yep. and McDuffie. And the pressure has been a problem now where Micah, over the last two games, I saw Micah has 13 pressures. The rest of the team is 12. And
I'm surprised it's 12, to be honest. It feels like less than that.
Yeah. And you know, this validates the move to go get Micah. Of course, we all know that was a great move, but why it was necessary and you couldn't just rely on guys to step up. But now you have Micah and you still need guys to step up. And I just don't know. Maybe Van Ness comes back and we just haven't really seen it from him so far in his career. There's got to be somewhere, right? Like along that D line, are you looking at Gary? What guy are you looking at and saying, we need more? Everyone?
Everyone. But I mean, I think Rashawn Gary is very much in the spotlight of, hey, you were supposed to be the number one edge rusher on this team just a week before the season started. And you were going to have to be that guy. And now Mike is taking all this pressure off of you and taking a lot of the double teams and triple teams and making it so that you're getting one-on-ones and you are in a super advantageous position because of that. You've got to be able to win. And he has not at a high enough level. And I would put Devontae Wyatt since coming back from injury, very much in the same situation where he's had the last two games since coming back from injury has been basically unable to generate any pressure and has not gotten off blocks well at all from a run defense standpoint either. They need both of those guys. And yes, LVN coming back should help and help the rotation a little bit. The other thing with Gary, and we've been talking about this from a Green Bay standpoint this week, but Gary played one fewer snap than Kingsley and Igbari in this game. And maybe we eventually find out this week that Gary is dealing with an injury or is on the injury report. This isn't super uncommon for him. It's not the worst thing in the world if you're going to rotate and he's going to play 38 snaps or whatever it was. That's okay. But man, when you come in, you better be fresh. And you better be ready to make an impact, especially when you're getting some of these one-on-one third down scenarios. And again, we just haven't seen enough of that. So a lot of the focus right now is on Rashawn, and I think deservedly and rightfully so. We'll be right back. Today's episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. Now, the weather might be changing, but the feeling of being right never, ever, ever gets old. So keep the season rolling on Prize Picks by getting $50 in lineups instantly when you play your first $5 lineup. Now, it's time to start getting ready for Week 12 as Green Bay takes on Minnesota to try and get some momentum in the NFC North. This needs to be a big win for Green Bay, and I'm going with Micah Parsons to terrorize the Minnesota offense. Elsewhere in Week 12, I'm going with big games from Jonathan Taylor, Breece Hall, and Drake May. Here's the best part. Prize Picks is super simple. Just pick more or less on at least two player stats. If you get your picks right, you could cash in. And even better, how you play is completely up to you. If you want flexibility, choose Flex Play, where you can get paid even if one of your picks misses. And if you want the biggest payouts, go for the power play. No matter how you play, Prize Picks is a great way to put your takes to the test. So what are you waiting for? Download the Prize Picks app today using code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. That's code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. And don't forget that code PACKADAY, Prize Picks. It's good to be right. Hey friends, I've got some great news for you. I've got part of your holiday shopping already taken care of. I am absolutely obsessed with my new Ridge wallet, and it's going to make an absolutely perfect holiday gift for just about everyone in your life. It's also a perfect gift suggestion for yourself as well. I'll be honest, I was just about done with wallets. I suffer from back pain, which doesn't help. Plus, they are clunky to carry around, and I just don't even like having a wallet with me. That was until I discovered Ridge. Ridge is known for their unique, slim, and modern wallets. And Ridge has been perfecting the wallet for 12 years, and their new Ridge 2.0 is 10% lighter. Plus, they have over 50 colors and styles to choose from, including every NFL, MLB, or college team. And I just know that Packers one is already calling out to you. Now, Ridge is over 100
100,000 five-star reviews, and with their Ridge Tracker card, you'll always know exactly where it is before panic mode kicks in. And right now, for a limited time, Ridge is having their huge holiday sale. Head to RIDGE.com to get 47% off your order. This is by far the biggest discount they've given all year. That's RIDGE.com, Ridge.com, for up to 47% off your order during their biggest sale of the year. And after you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them Packaday sent you.
I saw a chart that listed, you know, pass rush attempts to quick pressures, or pressures under 2.5 seconds. And Garrett, no one in the league who has played as many snaps or had as many pass rushing opportunities as Rashawn Gary has fewer quick pressures in the league. And when you look at the chart, you know, Mike is way up there at the top. And then Gary's just he's just sitting there at the bottom. And you're going, come on, like, we got to get something from this guy.
And it would be one thing, too, if like, if it's okay, he's one of these slow burn defensive ends. He's going to convert speed to power. He's going to have to work his way through. If he's collapsing the pocket on the other side and, you know, bull rushing somebody so that the quarterback can't step to that side, almost forcing them more to Mike. Okay. Like, it, you would still prefer the quick rush and the quick pressure, but like, you could understand, like, there's still a ton of value in him collapsing the pocket from one side to force him into Micah's side. Right. That would be beautiful. That would be gorgeous, but you haven't seen enough of that either. So it kind of, both things going hand in hand where he's not winning quick and he's not collapsing pockets. You're seeing anything from Gary, even earlier in the year when he was getting some sacks and it looked good. A lot of those were cleanup sacks. One was an unblocked sack. A couple were cleanup sacks from Micah Parsons, really the one generating the pressure. They need more from him for sure.
Mm-hmm. So we've been very negative about the Packers coming off a win. So I'm going to try and say something here and turn it over to the offense a little bit. I know Jordan Love's like initial stat line doesn't stand out too much. 13 for 24, 170 yards, 2 touchdowns. If you didn't watch the game, you might think it was a ho-hum performance from Jordan Love. But I actually thought watching this game, even though there was a plague of drops on the receivers, it was just one of those Green Bay games that seems to happen every year. This felt like a big bounce back game from the offense after a few times struggling, getting touchdowns on half their drives. Jordan Love playing the level of football that we expect from his contract. If I were a Packers fan, even though the defense would have me worried, I was generally happy about the offense this game, and it made me optimistic things will turn around the second part of the season.
I don't know if this was Jordan's best game. I still think it's the Dallas game in the playoffs. PFF had this graded as Jordan's best game of his career. Again, just to show you, the box score doesn't matter a whole heck of a lot sometimes. Of course, 7 drops by the receivers on offense.
Was it 7?
I thought it was 7, yeah. Oh, Jordan was phenomenal in this game. It was one of my favorite Jordan Love performances. He had so much to deal with too. I mean, you guys, I'm sure, saw maybe the Luke Musgrave play where it was either a catch or a fumble. They ruled it a fumble and then, or sorry, a drop or a fumble. They ruled it a fumble and then reversed it to a drop. But like, that's a great microcosm of like how the game went. On that play, Wicks, Watson, and Golden all went on their routes. And Watson's going to be open deep down the field. And even if you wanted to hit some of the other two, I think Wicks is eventually going to get cut off by like a roaming safety. And then, but Wicks, or Golden, one of the two is open on the side too. Sorry, Wicks and Watson are open. Golden's the one that gets cut off. And but there's an opportunity there for a big explosive play. Sean Ryan snaps the ball at his feet. Jordan's got to go down to get it. And then Jordan gets up and like still avoids the pressure and then gets the ball to Musgrave as a check down. And then Musgrave turns and just like vomits the ball away. And thankfully for Green Bay, it turns to be an incomplete pass. But like, that's the opportunity for an explosive play by a couple different players. And because of a bad snap, there's nothing going for it. And Jordan does everything to salvage it. And it still almost results in a fumble by his tight end. There's another play. I talked about this with Paul Bredel as well. Early in the game on third and 10. And I think Matt does a great job of designing this play. And Jordan's going to roll out to his right. And they've got the tight end to pick off the defensive end who's coming free. It's basically like a 3-layer throw, like a deep and out and a corner out and out and then a play in the flat. And he's going to roll out and read the 3. And the 2 wide receivers on top are basically running into each other. The player who's coming in the flat runs into the tight end who's supposed to pick off the defensive end. So those two run into each other. So now not only do you not have your flat player, you don't have your blocker to pick off the guy that you left unblocked. So Jordan has to avoid the rusher, avoids him, steps back, replants, finds Romeo Doubs coming over the middle of the field, hits him for the first, Doubs drops it. Like that was the type of day that it was for Jordan Love. Not to mention he went out of the game with a shoulder injury and had to navigate that pain. Later in the game, DeMarcus Lawrence, 370 pounds of him, lands right on his shoulder as well. Like to tough through that game, not to mention windy conditions, seven drops, leaving the game with an injury, all of it. And then to basically will his team to victory at the end, and including an incredible 30 plus yard play to Savion Williams on a had to have it third and 10, where he bought time, and finally gave it a pass to Savion where only Savion could get it. It was a tremendous performance that I think is going to go at least fall on deaf ears for most people that are just looking at the box score.
He was phenomenal. I actually thought my favorite play he had the whole day was actually the, I think that Dobbs was coming across and Jordan escaped and just had on the run, did a little touch pass. It was like perfect.
It was gorgeous.
Yeah, it was just a perfect pass. And every now and then I'm like, I can make that throw watching football games. And I watch that one. It's just like, yeah, I'm not coming close. No normal person. Most quarterbacks aren't making that throw. But yeah, it was a gritty performance for sure from Love. And he was under pressure a lot of the day too. I thought he wound up throwing off his back foot more times than not because people were bearing down on him. He got out of the pocket and I thought he had just a great day. And you're right, Andy, it probably is going to fall on deaf ears because all you see at the end is people talking about, you know, the defense like me, or they're talking about the great catch at the end, or Josh Jacobs, who look for you guys. Fortunately, it seems like he'll be okay and might even play against the Vikings.
It depends on the swelling of his knee. So he banged his knee on the concrete of the Jets and Giants stadium and basically had like a contusion. So apparently it's just all going to come down to, does the swelling go down enough between now and then where he can play? I guarantee you, knowing Josh Jacobs, he's going to do everything he can to play in that game. But it's obviously going to come down to a medical decision.
You don't have a lot of running back depth. It's important that he get healthy. I think the responsible thing to do is to hold Josh Jacobs out for the week.
Totally agree.
You don't need him to beat the Vikings, right?
I hope you're right, actually. I hope that is right.
I do wonder, though, one of the big changes I saw in the offense this game was Jordan aired it a lot farther than he typically does. Up until this point, like his average depth of target on passes was something like 8.5 yards. This game, it was over 12. Do you think there's some connection between deeper passes and a more efficient Jordan Love, and whether we might see that a little bit more from the offense? Because a lot of Packers fans, I think, with Watson healthy, have wanted to see that.
Yeah, I think they have to. I just think that's their offense. I think that's Jordan. I think that's what they do best. They don't have anybody to run after the catch anymore. Jaden Reed is out. Tucker Kraft is out. They don't have rack guys. So, to me, they have to open up this offense more. And I get teams are going to play, you know, soft defenses and put, you know, a ton of guys in coverage and not buy the play action. I still almost like Jordan's ability to make people miss and buy time and create plays and these receivers' ability to get open more than I kind of like anything else in the offense. So I think this is sort of the way that they're going to have to live. And, you know, when, especially if Jacobs is out this week, that's another, you know, yards after contact guy that's gone. To me, you just have to put it in Jordan's hands, let him cook a little bit. I think we saw that this week, and I'm hopeful that we see a little bit more of that moving forward.
Too quick, and then we can wrap up the Packers, I guess, but unless you guys have more thoughts. But I had two quick questions for you, Andy. If we go big deal, little deal, or no deal. The first one I want to do is the drops with the receivers right now. Back-to-back weeks where it's been a very noticeable to everybody watching. Big deal, little deal, no deal.
I would love to just say like no deal or little deal, but when this has been an issue, you know, going back all the way to last year and early in this year, it felt like, all right, they've kind of got it under control, and it wasn't really an issue in 2013, but now it's starting to rear its ugly head again. I'm hopeful that it's a little deal, but I'm nervous moving forward just because we've seen this in the past. And again, if you don't have run after the catch guys and you can't run the ball effectively and you're gonna have to live in this, you know, sort of spread it out, throw it down the field offense, okay, but you better be able to pay off those opportunities when you get them. And Green Bay did a very poor job of that this past game.
Yeah, and they're not just, a lot of these drops aren't, you know, oh, it's a tough contested catch, like the Dobbs one and the Melton one from the Eagles game. These are like, you know, right there. I mean, it's brutal. And
did
the other
see
one,
the Melton one, by the way, did you Philly? See the ultra slow mo of that
against Philly?
Yeah,
I haven't seen the ultra. Oh, I think I did, but
he, it's coming at him. his mouth guard is out of his mouth hanging down.
Seen that.
It hits the mouth guard. It hits the mouth guard and like takes a bobble right before he's about to catch it. Cause his mouth guard is out of his mouth and hanging down and the ball literally hits his mouth guard. I don't know how much that affected it or not, but it literally hits his mouth guard before getting to him.
I mean, you do see like when there's that slight deflection, anyone who's played football before, right? Like if there's like a slight tip or alteration of the ball, it can mess. I don't know how it's messing with, like, you know, your eyes, but that would be truly unbelievable if the mouth guard impacted it. And the other one I wanted to ask you was the kicking situation now. Have Rasik.
Big deal.
I kind of knew that's where we were going to get. What would you do? What would you do? I think the wind was probably the bigger factor last week. It was, I mean, you saw it in Philly too. You saw it in the warmups for this game. It was, ball was flying all over the field, but like, how would you manage this situation?
Mark Murphy screwed up so much. If he's going to take a bullet for the whole tush push thing, just go for banned special teams. We need to ban special teams the Green Bay Packers have been so bad at special teams for so long. Screw the tush push. You play the Eagles once a year. If you get rid of special teams entirely, that's when the Packers can get back to their, you know, playing like they should play. I have no faith in anything special teams related. What I would do, I would go for it. I would go for two. I would go for it on fourth and 21. Don't care. Go for it. Just go for it at this point.
Dan Campbell.
Yeah, I know. Right. Hopefully that this was a one-off for Haversick. The snap and hold weren't great on the second one. Mm-hmm. I have no faith though that he's going to come in and kick. I'm sure if McManus is healthy, they'll go back to him, but he's had a rough year too. It felt like, for the first time, you know, when they re-signed Whalen, who had a really good game in this game, their punter, and then re-signed McManus, they re-signed their long snapper as well. It felt like, oh my goodness, like there's the Packers have their kicker, their long snapper, their punter for like the first time in basically my lifetime. Like it feels like they are set at all three, at least maybe since like the 96, like the Super Bowl team. And when they had Hendrick and Chris Jackie, it felt like they had all three for the first time. And now it's just like, oh, no, the kicker can't kick again. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, that I couldn't believe. I was late to I turned away after you guys scored the first touchdown, and I walked back in the room and was like, are you kidding me? He missed again. Like they just can't find a way to. I think once McManus gets healthy, it'll be okay. He's clearly hampered.
Fingers crossed.
Or not.
Yeah, who knows? I trust nothing.
So the Viking game, as we said off the top, not yet, a 19-17 loss to the Bears. I really did get excited when McCarthy led him down the field and found Addison for the go-ahead touchdown. Right before that, I texted our good buddy Weston, who's a big Bears fan. With no confidence at all, I was just completely trolling. I said, it's going to happen again, Wes, with the Viking late comeback. And I was so pumped up when they put in the end zone, only to have special teams doom us as well with a 60-yard kickoff return. I mean, that's so Vikings, isn't it? You have this awesome moment completely ruined by a 60-yard kickoff return, and Bears gain a couple yards, kick a field goal. Ziggy, after the game, you said on our show, and I'm going to give you a chance to walk back on this. I don't know if you heard this, Andy, but Ziggy basically said he's completely out on J.J. McCarthy. The Vikings will never go anywhere with him as the quarterback.
So that's not quite what I said.
Okay,
what
I'm sorry.
I am not familiar with any time in NFL history where a quarterback in this good situation has had this bad of a start and has turned it around to become a really productive quarterback. Indeed, like The Athletic ran a headline this morning, can Vikings quarterback J.J. McCarthy turn it around, a la Panthers quarterback Bryce Young?
I saw that.
So it seems like that might be what people are targeting. If somebody can give me the historical comp of a quarterback with the all-pro wide receiver one, the really strong wide receiver two, the good offensive line, the good head coach, a year to sit back and learn the system, and then had, by EPA per play or by whatever metrics you want, basically the worst performance in the NFL through six or seven games, and you can show me the guy who's turned into a quality starting quarterback, I'll walk it back. Until then, I am not confident that J.J. McCarthy is going to get better, and every week that he puts out a bad performance should decrease your confidence as a Vikings fan that I'm wrong.
I'm sure you guys have seen the tweet from Skull Smith, Skull Cole. on Twitter.
Yeah, I did.
It's phenomenal.
It's brilliant.
The tweet brilliant. Says, here's number one, cut J.J. McCarthy, officially declaring him a bust. Number two, sign McCarthy, former draft bust, and have Kevin O'Connell fix him. It is just absolutely perfect.
It's brilliant.
It's brilliant. It's got 2.1 million views already as we're recording this, deservedly so. It is a fantastic tweet. It is hard to find a comp. And one of the reasons I felt so confident in McCarthy was because of the situation too. You know, he was at a situation, and I know people say like, well, you know, Michigan carried him as a quarterback, and it's like, well, he's in a similar situation to Minnesota. They've got the running back, they've got the coach, they've got the quarterback's coach, they've got the wide receivers, the tight end, felt like the offensive line. And it just has not come anywhere near close. I mean, you talked about the analytics, Ziggy. Analytically, McCarthy is, it's comical where
he's substantially worse than Dylan Gabriel and Cam Ward, who are themselves having terrible seasons.
Really rough years, really rough years. This is one I'm probably just going to have to take a draft eval L on if this continues the way that it is. It's frightening. And like some of the plays too. It doesn't look good at the moment. I'll put it that way. I will say we know quarterbacks, especially right now, like they take time to develop. He's one of the youngest, but man, the learning curve looks extremely, extremely steep for him right now.
And I'll admit the thing that worries me about J.J. McCarthy is all this time, and Paul and I have talked about this, we were sold on maybe the physical stuff's not there, maybe the experience isn't there, but the mental side is 100% there, and he's ready to go on that front. And while it's obviously hard to separate those, it just doesn't feel like any part of the game is going well. The throw velocity is not there, but he's also off target. The mechanics don't seem to be going great, but he's also failing to get his reads and getting overwhelmed. Physically, he struggles once he throws more than maybe 15 or 20 passes a game, but he's also having a hard time navigating the pocket. It's like it doesn't seem when I watch J.J. McCarthy outside of the last drive of the game where you see here's why the Vikings drafted this guy and believed in him. Like basically anything on the development front is going well. And it doesn't seem like he's getting better as the season goes on either. Paul, save me from this. Bail me out here. Tell me something to be positive about.
Well, I will just say we do have to acknowledge the couple of the late game heroics that he's had. You know, I don't think everybody in the league has that trait. I think I don't want to say you're born with it, but I do think he has that. I think he has that moxie to him. Then in big moments, he plays his best. I really do believe that. And I think Kevin O'Connell said it's now about taking that J.J. McCarthy and having him be that way on 2nd and 5 in the second quarter of a football game. Totally understand it. But I do think we have to give him credit. He has had a couple big moments this year, even if they are few and far between. But Ziggy, I actually had my come to Jesus moment yesterday with J.J. McCarthy. And I realized just how ridiculous everyone's being, like truly ridiculous. Because he has been shockingly bad, but people are calling for Max Brosmer to play. I mean, at one point on Sunday, I think at one point on Sunday, I said Max Brosmer, put him in the game. People are super upset about Darnold. I have also been one of those people, although you saw this weekend why the Vikings decided to move on from Darnold. People talk about drafting a new quarterback, whatever it's you want to say. And then I realized it's been 5 games, like 5 games of a professional career. And I think I said this last week. I think I said 4 games. Now, yes, it didn't get better game 4 to game 5, but 5 games. We made this decision to go with McCarthy because we're developing a quarterback, right? That's what everyone said. The Vikings have chosen to develop J.J. McCarthy. Develop is a key word there. There are going to be highs. There are going to be lows. There have been a lot more lows right now with J.J. than highs. But you have to accept the good and the bad. And
But Paul, it's just bad.
No, that was going to be my question.
Is the good not, that he's had 2 good drives in his career as a Viking?
It's not all bad, Ziggy. It's, you know, beat Chicago in the comeback. Yes, that was one good. Going to Detroit and beat them, and he's making a couple of really nice throws a game where, you know, Jefferson had a drop last week. Addison had a big drop last week. It's not just J.J. failing. Yes, he was wildly inaccurate, too. Like, he did not have a good game. I'm not trying to defend J.J. there. What I am trying to defend is we are just so quick to judge quarterbacks. Everyone said C.J. Stroud was going to be the next top 5 QB in the league. How do you feel about C.J. Stroud right now? Like, do you think he's going to be the next guy anymore? Most people don't. Last year, Jaden Daniels was surefire top five quarterback coming into the league this year. And yes, injuries have played a big role, but you know, here, look at the Commanders right now, a little shaky. Caleb has been playing really well lately. And the first, you know, they lost 10 games in a row last year. I just think, and even Drake May, right? Drake May didn't get a lot of attention last season. Now he's an MVP candidate. We're talking five games into a career. And I really think everyone needs to slow down a little bit on, if you say he had a bad, like, let's analyze this individual game by individual game. Yeah, he was horrible. But I can't just come out here and say, oh, we made, like, it's over. It's five games. When everyone else around the league is clearly, you know, you got to give it time and you got to let O'Connell do his thing. So I'm just over the JJ has failed conversation until, you know, next Thanksgiving. If he still sucks, then we could sit here and go, okay, yeah, that went really, really poorly. But it's just, it's too early.
I think the big thing when you are a fan of a team that's got a young quarterback, and you mentioned, like, you know, you're looking at you need to see signs of progress, right? That's what you're looking at. It doesn't have to be perfect. Sometimes you're going to take one step forward, two steps back, and it might even be three steps back and then another step forward. There's going to be those growing pains for sure. You're just looking for some signs of, like, what could this look like? And like, if you put together, like, the perfect JJ McCarthy game so far, is that good? And probably if you took probably his best four quarters of play and put it in one, yeah, you're probably looking at that. That probably looks pretty damn good. It just, can you see a game where it looks like, yeah, all right, he played well enough through the entirety of a game where it's like, that's proof of concept of what this could become moving forward. And again, that's not always going to happen in your first five games as an NFL starter. Like, if you're looking at the pessimist side, you could say, man, CJ Stroud and Jaden Daniels looked freaking unbelievable. And even they are struggling, you know, in their second and third years. And they looked like, if you're not looking good right away, then what is that next step? But every quarterback's different. As you mentioned, Drake May, Caleb Williams, you know, there's a ton of others as well. Jordan Love, I promise you, would have looked as bad, if not worse, in his first, you know, year and a half as a starter. Go to that Chiefs game the first time he started. Looks probably eerily similar to what JJ McCarthy looks like. And I think where we all probably thought, Vikings fans, I'm sure, and I think myself and a lot of other people looking at this, of like, this is the ideal scenario. You're going to Minnesota, you're going in this. The flip side that I don't think got looked at as much is, A, that was a team that was ready to win, and that comes with expectations and pressure right away to win. That's a lot for a young quarterback, especially, again, I think youngest in the league from a starting standpoint, to deal with and to have. And I mean, you can tell Justin Jefferson's not exactly hiding his feelings at times of how things are going. That, I'm sure, doesn't, you know, ease anything either. And then the other thing, which I don't think any of us could have planned for, and some of the Cinderella slipper is falling off, but when you see Daniel Jones and Sam Darnold playing for overall the course of the season, as well as they are, and you decided to go with this quarterback because instead of the other two, and the other two look, you know, at least comparatively pretty freaking incredible. Now, again, that ups the pressure of, like, you need to live up to doing what they're doing, because they chose you over those two guys. So on paper, again, it looked like this is what a perfect scenario, but man, expectations are a pain in the ass sometimes too.
Wouldn't you like to see something against one of the worst secondaries in the league? I mean, yes. Joe Flacco hadn't thrown that many yards as he did against the Bears. I mean, it was the most in his career by nearly 100. He hadn't come close since 2011. It had been 14 years of Joe Flacco playing worse than that, and then he got to play the Bears and it went better. Jackson Dart had an outstanding game. Tyler Huntley had one of the best games of his career against the Bears. The secondary is injured. The defensive line is not getting pressure. And then you see J.J. McCarthy, not 400 yards, not 300 yards, not 200 yards, not 175 yards, 150, a touchdown and two interceptions. I know I'm being very negative, but just show me the comp, Paul.
No, I can't show you the comp. And you just watch the first drive, and he has two horrendous misses to Addison and Jefferson. And there's multiple, he's thrown eight interceptions in five games. It's, you can't win in the NFL when you're losing the turnover battle like that. But one last thing I'll say about JJ, and Andy, you brought it up talking about the win now for the Vikings. And a lot of people get caught up on this decision saying the window's now. Like, this is the window that the Vikings were supposed to have. I actually disagree with them. I do agree that, you know, if you had Darnold playing the way he has this season so far outside of the Rams game, yeah, we're probably like 8-2, honestly, or 7-3 up there competing for the one seed. But if JJ works out the way O'Connell sees it and Kwesi sees it, the window is 10 years, 15. Like, for sure. It's the Joe Burrow quote. The window's as long as I'm here. And that's where I think a lot of Vikings fans need to calm down a bit. This isn't, you know, if JJ takes another year to work out and it actually works out, okay, like, you could turn it around really, really fast. Just look at New England. Like, once you have the quarterback, everything else can be filled in pretty easily.
But there is a big difference between us and New England. We're number one in cash spending this year in the NFL. The Vikings are currently projected $40 million over the cap next year. The team around J.J. McCarthy will be worse next year.
Yeah,
so
but
if it's not like New England was able to go and Drake Mays showed some signs of improvement and they could say, okay, you know, he's getting a little bit better. Let's add a bunch of pieces to help him out. Let's bring in a new receiver. Let's add some players on the defense. The Vikings are going to have to cut players, and that's not even including guys like Jordan Addison, who we need to think about extending.
Yeah, I just don't think that if we're looking at this over the course of a handful of seasons with JJ being, let's just say he's a borderline top 10 QB in football, you can strip down a roster and build back up a roster. Like, I don't think that's...
I just mean for his development, you like the team to get better every year he's with them, not worse.
Yeah, and Justin Jefferson will be there. Like, Justin Jefferson Fair will enough. Be there, and that, to me, is enough. Yeah, hopefully.
If he
oh
keeps
my
complaining
gosh.
In the middle of games.
Then, yes, then that would be a problem. That would be a real problem. Do you guys think... I just want to ask you about the Bears for a second, because I feel like at 7-3 atop the North, they deserve at least a question. Do you guys think this is sustainable? Like, they're winning games miraculously, but... they also have been running the football really, really well with Swift and Menungai. And their defense, yeah, while it has been gashed, they lead the league in turnovers and turnover differential. And, you know, you make enough of those plays. If you can control the clock and you can get the football, you're going to be in a lot of games. It feels like this is the point of the year right here now for Chicago with all these big divisional games coming up where we're going to learn, are they for real or not? Pitt, Philly, Green Bay. Just wondering, what do you guys think it is sustainable?
We'll be right back. Anybody else feeling the financial squeeze right now? Everything just feels a little bit tougher, and I, for one, don't have the time to constantly monitor my finances and see where every little dollar and cent is being allocated. Thankfully, Chime understands that every dollar counts. That's why when you set up direct deposit through Chime, you can get access to fee-free features like free overdraft coverage, getting paid up to 2 days early, and so much more. I highly encourage that you take the time to learn more over at chime.com/packaday. Not only do we use Chime as a family, but I know multiple friends who use Chime and swear by it as well. The early payments, the free overdraft coverage, and access to over 47,000 free ATMs have not only been beneficial, but have come in huge in some really difficult situations. I didn't even mention the ability to get daily balance updates and real-time transaction alerts, which have helped shape our spending habits. So work on your financial goals through Chime today. Open an account in 2 minutes at chime.com/packaday. That's chime.com/packaday. Chime. Feels like progress.
Chime is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services and debit card provided by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. Members FDIC. Spot me eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply. Timing depends on submission of payment file. Fees apply at out-of-network ATMs. Bank ranking and number of ATMs according to U.S. News and World Report 2023. Chime checking account required.
Guys, it's 2025. The days of going to the doctor for emergencies are over. No more waiting until walking it off for 6 months doesn't work or your fingers are numb from texting, "I'm fine." It's time to take our health more seriously and get things checked out when we need to. That's where ZocDoc comes in. ZocDoc makes it easier than ever by helping to find the right doctor quickly and easily. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare high-quality, in-network doctors and click to instantly book an appointment. You can filter for doctors who take your insurance, are located nearby, and are highly rated by verified patients. Appointments made through ZocDoc happen fast, typically within just 24 to 72 hours of booking, and more often than not, you can even get same-day appointments. I've already had family members who have used ZocDoc and loved it, and I'll absolutely be utilizing it on all my appointments from here on out. So stop putting off those doctor's appointments and go to ZocDoc.com/packaday to find and instantly book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/packaday. Again, ZocDoc, ZocDoc.com/packaday.
You go first, Ziggy.
The Chicago Bears do not have a positive point differential. They're winning a bunch of one-score games against really bad teams. The defense has generated a lot of turnovers, but otherwise, when I squint, I don't see the 2025 Chicago Bears. I see the 2022 Minnesota Vikings. A lot of miraculous late-game comebacks. Things went great for the Vikings during the regular season. We finished 13-4, and while I don't think the Bears will finish that well, I've turned on expecting them to make the playoffs. I think they've won enough games at this point that it's probable they will. I don't think they're going anywhere because I don't think that winning games like this, one-point wins against the Raiders, against the Commanders, teams at the bottom of the NFL, is sustainable. What is sustainable is the progress they're making on offense. The offense looks much better than last year, but the record is not.
So here's where I'm at with the Bears. I absolutely do not think the way that they've played so far is sustainable from like winning the NFC North, being a contender in the NFC. I still think of the like top eight teams, if you really look at kind of the cutoff as San Francisco, or is it Detroit is number eight right now? Like, I still think they're like the eighth of those eight teams. But what I will say is I think they're going to continue to be a pain in the ass to play. I don't think anyone really wants to play them. I think they're going to be a hard, you know, a hard fought game every single time. And I think for a first year head coach who is trying to rewrite the, you know, reroute the ship and get it going in the right direction and, you know, work with Caleb Williams for the first time, I think what they're doing is planting the foundation of what is going to be a better team moving forward. And I think just Ben Johnson getting the buy-in from his team, from having this start and this record already, I think is going to be huge for him. So I think this is more planting seeds for what they're hoping is to come in the future and playing a better brand of football. And I think by doing this already and getting this record, by maybe even, you know, maybe getting some turnover luck and some things like that, I think it's set them up to do exactly that and get the buy-in that Ben Johnson needs. So I think it's going to make them more potent and better down the road. And I think they're ahead of schedule. But I think here in 2025, do I think it's sustainable as like a no, I don't. But I do think they have to be, as Bears fans, extremely excited about where things are trending and where things are going to be going moving forward.
They close the year now with the Steelers at Philly, at Green Bay, host the Browns, host the Packers, at San Fran versus Detroit.
Yeah.
If they end the year 2-5, like let's pretend they lose at Philly, they lose both the Green Bay games, they lose in San Francisco, they lose to Detroit, which is all possible, right? I mean, maybe unlikely they lose all five, but let's say they do and they're 9-8. Is this season still a success?
Probably not. It's going to leave a poor taste in your mouth, I would think, at that point. And it's going to be like, oh, it's just the same old Bears sort of thing. So I'd say probably not. If they could get to 10 wins, I think if they could, you know, if they get to 10 wins,
I think
you're probably looking at a success no matter what.
Yeah. I think you got to go 3-4.
You can't start 7-3 and miss the playoffs.
Yeah. I think you got to go 3-4 here. You know, they should beat the Steelers, especially if Rodgers doesn't play, but you should win that game at home and you should beat the Browns at home. And if you could pick off, you know, if you
one
pick
of
off
the other ones,
one of them, the other ones. Right? Yeah. Two, you have an 11 win team. And then I think you feel great about, like, no matter what happens in the playoffs, huge success, as you said, Andy, planting the seeds. But there is still that world where 7-3 does set some. I think the expectation now is we're going to go to the playoffs this year, and if you, it's not the same as it was in the beginning of the season where it was just have them develop, but now that we're here, it's okay, let's not fall apart the way they did last season, which I don't think that'll happen. It's just a different team and you're not seeing the, you know, Thanksgiving Day collapses like they were having. But that's just something to pay attention to over the final 7 weeks here. Is schedule's a little tougher, but they haven't played. I mean, look at who they played, guys. I didn't even realize this, but going back to the Dallas win, it was Dallas, the Raiders, the Commanders with Jaden was good, New Orleans, Baltimore without Lamar, Cincinnati without Burrow, the Giants and the Vikings. Like, this is a much, much more difficult schedule coming up, and we're going to see what the Bears are actually made of.
And even with that, they have a negative point. Well, I guess yes. Part of that's due to a 52-21 loss to Detroit in week two, but yeah.
So last thing before we move on to the week 12, and then we'll wrap it up here. I'm just looking at the standings right now, because we've kind of been talking playoffs the past few minutes. It feels like the NFC to me is between eight teams. If you want to put the Panthers in there, guys, like, go ahead and put the Panthers. They're just not really on my radar, even though they're, I guess they technically are in the hunt here at 6-5. But who do you think winds up being the odd man left out? Right? Currently, it's the division leaders are Philly, the Rams, the Bears, and the Bucks. The wild card at 7-3, Seattle, 6-3-1, Packers, 7-4, 49ers, with the 6-4 Lions on the outside looking in at the 8. I know none of us have done any, you know, schedule predicting right before the show, so I'm sorry to put anyone on the spot, but do you guys have a pick right now as to who that last team out is going to be here? And I mean, it could be the Lions, but San Fran's schedule is just so easy. I have to imagine they're going to find their way in.
And Brock Purdy's back, which helps.
Yeah.
I think when you're making this prediction, there are not going to be three NFC North teams in the playoffs this year. I just can't see it. Because these are what their records are. They're all barely in the hunt. They still have to play each other a bunch of times. So the question for me is, which NFC North team am I going to pick? And I know I just said that it's hard for me not to pick the Bears, given that they're 7-3 and I'm going back and forth. But when you look at the teams they're going to have to beat, they have to play the NFC North a lot. Compare that to the 49ers. Compare that to the Seahawks. I think I have to take the Bears to be the one out, even though Bears fans are going to be unhappy. I think every other team around there is noticeably better.
Yeah, I'm with Ziggy in the fact that I think this comes down to the NFC North battles coming up. And you guys are going to have a huge say in this, not from Minnesota making the playoffs, but
you never know.
How you guys do. And I mean, you got two games against Green Bay. You've got a game against Detroit. Obviously, you had the game against Chicago this past week, but you're going to have, you know, three games in there still.
We play the Seahawks, yes, too.
Seattle,
we play,
too.
Yeah. Another wild card.
That's true. Yeah, you play Seattle as well. So, yeah, I'm going to say, though, that the two games, Packers versus Bears, are going to be massive. Obviously, Packers, Lions on Thanksgiving, and then Lions, Bears as well. Like, I think it's going to come down to those individual matchups and who comes out on top of those. If I had to bet, I would probably say Chicago would be my guess to that ends up not making it. I think the Seahawks and the 49ers have easy enough schedules to make it by. But I mean, I really sincerely could come down to some of those, you know, Packers Bears games, which are going to be very into. They play each other twice in 13 days, which is kind of a crazy scheduling quirk. So yeah, I think that could easily be the case.
Yeah,
I think you're right, Andy. It's hard for me to see the Packers and the Bears making the playoffs this year just because those two games loom large. Unless the Lions collapse, that seems unlikely. How crazy is it and how fun is it going to be that, like, the Bears-Packers, which has been a one-sided rivalry for so long, finally the Bears are starting to get better. And now it's like two games in 13 days to decide which team goes to the playoffs. Like, the NFC North message boards are going to be off the charts.
Oh, it's going to be great. Yeah, so. But I'm looking too. You know, Detroit's got Green Bay at the Rams, and I'm circling, and I kind of circled at the beginning of the year the 49ers Chicago game week 17 in San Francisco could be a massive one as far as wild card goes. But then the following week, the Bears host the Lions. I think those last two Bears weeks right there, and yeah, the Packers games are huge as well. So Chicago really has their opportunity against everyone. But those last 2 weeks in particular, I'm looking at the Bears, 49ers, Bears, Lions, and loser might be out. It's going to be a great end of the year.
The Bears, honestly, we talked about the Minnesota. The Bears are going to have so much say in this playoff pick. Even the Steelers game this week is going to have huge implications in the AFC North. And then they've got Philly, which doesn't affect the East, but certainly could affect playoff seeding. And then Green Bay twice, San Francisco and Detroit. Like, yeah. Chicago is going to be pretty much must watch for, you know, playoff seeding in a lot of ways the rest of this year.
No, it'll be great. I mean, and it's fun to also have Packers Lions on Thanksgiving. Like, that game really meaning something. Past few years, you know, Bears Lions didn't really move the needle for me, other than the end was awesome. The end was hysterical.
Yes.
But all right, let's do the predictions for week 12. and we'll wrap it up here.
Oh, wait, one question, oh, yeah, one question before we get to predictions. Okay. Oh, where are we at? Where are we at on the tank watch for the Minnesota Vikings? Are either of you on tank watch yet? Are you still, do you still want wins, or do you get to like good football, but like, oh, we lost on a last second field goal, shucks sort of mode?
If we lose this week, I'm there. If we lose to you guys, if we beat you guys, I'll find it in me one more time. You know, one last ride with the dark magic, but I'm going to say if we lose to you, gosh, we go to you, then go to Seattle. Yeah.
I am not on tank watch for the following reason. As nice as things have been for the Vikings for the past few years, I am just getting the sense watching this team like the locker room is ready to blow. We're seeing Justin Jefferson, Mr. Consistency, start to get upset. Like, if the Vikings collapse down the stretch, I'm just seeing in my mind, like, the locker room blowing up, players yelling at coaches, Kevin O'Connell losing control. We need some positivity in Minnesota fast, because if that does not come, this offseason could involve one star player finally asking out and saying, I'm done with this. I want to go to a team that can win a playoff game. We have got to turn things around, and that starts with winning games, not moving up four or five picks in the draft.
I don't think the locker room will blow up. I don't think Jefferson's that kind of guy. I mean, I guess that's who you're circling right now.
I didn't think Justin Jefferson was quitting the middle of the game guy either.
No, but I don't think, look, if they lose to Green Bay, there comes a point where you have to accept that it's going to happen. Like, we're not going to be 4-8 with Jefferson being like, oh, what the fuck, what's going on here? I think at that point, he'll just kind of quietly fade off on this season and hope for better days ahead. You know, the Harrison Smiths, they got Aaron Jones, they got a great locker room with a good head coach who's had control the whole way through. So yeah, losing this week and I will officially be on. All right, let's go to Seattle, play a competitive game, and see what happens. It'll be that mode.
That'll be interesting.
So the Vikings go to Green Bay, where the Packers are 6.5-point favorites. Matt LaFleur is already pleading Packer fans to show up in the stands. It's supposed to be a, you know, purple rain coming in with Ziggy and I. Well, Ziggy will not be noticeably a purple rain in his Packer jersey, but the Vikings have actually won their last two in Lambeau. And with all of the things I just said, does anyone actually think the Vikings have a chance in this one?
The Packers have not covered a big spread like this. They also have not played a quarterback like J.J. McCarthy yet. I'm out. Packers win, Packers cover. They get their get right spot right before the Thanksgiving game.
I'm with Ziggy. Although I told him before the show, the last time I felt this confident that the Packers were good and the Vikings were bad, the Packers lost to Carolina at home and the Vikings beat Detroit. So if Vikings fans are looking for some optimism, maybe it's that, but I'm going to say Packers. I'm going to say stick with 27. They'll score 27 again, 27-13 Packers.
I actually think this will be a game if JJ can protect the football. And the Packers, like, that actually is a kind of fun storyline to watch, is Green Bay's 29th in the league with only 8 turnovers forced this year. And JJ is, right, I believe that's the right stat.
It's got to be, that's right, it's got to be.
I think they have 4 interceptions and 4 forced fumbles, or 4 fumble recoveries. And JJ is essentially a walking turnover. I mean, there was legitimately a play where two Bears were injured because both of them we're going for the interception. Like, it was like a punt return and they both ran into each other. Those are the kind of passes we've seen from JJ at times. So if JJ can hold on to the ball, I think the Vikings are absolutely talented enough to match up with Green Bay, and hopefully they get Grenard back and Van Ginkle's been playing awesome. You get some pressure on Love. So, you know, you can always say the turnover battle is something to watch. I think it'll be a competitive game, and my guess is it's one that Green Bay does force a fourth quarter turnover to go and make it a 2-score game. So I think they win by about 10 points. And I'll also go with the Packers, but I think it'll be fun.
I was going to say the good news is if JJ McCarthy throws them 3 passes, they might just drop it anyway. So you do have that potentially going for you.
Yeah. This could be a record for drops in a game.
Dropped interceptions. Yes.
It could be very ugly. And pay attention to Ryan Kelly, the Viking center, to see if he plays in this one. Probably not would be my guess, but he was really good before getting hurt. And I think Brandell's been in, and he's just been atrocious. Giants at Lions. Lions are 10.5-point favorites. I believe Lions. Jackson Dart will be returning.
Yeah, I got Lions. No concerns there for Detroit.
Yeah, the Lions win just fine. Yeah,
they blow out bad teams. And yeah. Last one, Steelers at Bears. Bears are 2.5-point favorites. Rodgers seems to be up in the air with the wrist injury. He won't need surgery. Who you guys got?
I have not been high on the Steelers team, but neither have I been high on this Bears team. This game has big implications for them both. I'm going to take the home team. I think that Chicago is rolling. I think that they're excited. I think the fans are going to show up for this big time. Aaron Rodgers has inflicted a lot of damage to the Bears at Soldier Field, and maybe is what's likely to be his last visit ever. The Bears get some revenge and manage to beat the Steelers, whether Rodgers is playing or not.
Let's get the Bears to 8-3 before that big collapse happens. So yeah, they'll go 8-3 before they start their really tough part of the schedule, and then we'll see what happens after that. But I say they win this one in a very close game.
I'm with you guys. Fool for picking Aaron Rodgers to lose at Soldier Field.
If he plays.
Yeah, if he plays.
If he plays. You're right. If Rodgers plays, I'll switch to the Steelers because he owns them. Andy, if the Vikings win, should Ziggy and I rush the field?
You do not do that. That's a bad idea. That's a bad idea.
He's speaking for himself here.
You're just going to see the Ziggy jersey?
A Packers jersey rushing the field after a Vikings win?
Be amazing.
All right, we'll wrap it up there. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. Andy, go ahead and close it out for us.
I don't have anything great to close today. Just enjoy Lambeau Field. I know you're going to be there, unfortunately, as Vikings fans, but it is one of those bucket list moments, and it's absolutely awesome to be there. So, enjoy the glory of a team with a winning tradition, and you know maybe that'll change something in your hearts. Their hearts grew three sizes that day, or something like that. But enjoy the game. Enjoy this week, everyone. We'll be back next week. Ziggy, Paul, and myself. Follow us on social media wherever the heck we are. But until next time, and as always, enjoy football.